Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, welcome to the 292nd episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Scott Burkhart and Troy Smith. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Warren Kaplan, and today we have on cinematographer and ASC member Kramer Morgenthau. He's shot a lot of awesome stuff, things you might have even seen. Creed 2, Thor, The Dark World, Chef. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah, I meant to bring up Chef.
Yeah, he shot a few episodes of Game of Thrones. He just shot the movie The Many Saints of Newark, which I might have said The Many Saints of New York a couple times during the episode. Just ignore it.
No, listeners just misheard.
Right.
You said Many Saints of Newark every time because you know what that movie is called. But if you hear it as New York, that's on you.
Yeah, that's your...
Not on Orin mispronouncing it.
Eardrum issue. He just shot Respect about Aretha Franklin. He finished shooting Spirited a few weeks ago with Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell and Octavia Spencer. Shot Fahrenheit 451, Boardwalk Empire, all these amazing things.
Waiting for Godot.
Yeah, Waiting for Godot.
Which I'm still waiting to see.
Waiting for Godot. Terminator Genesis. Whatever. What has he not shot? Anyway, we talk a lot about his process, about his relationship with various directors, and how he gets jobs. How you break down really big set pieces, spoiler alert, shot by shot. And
but that's refreshing, though. You know, I think it's good to know that, you know, everyone puts their pants on the same way, one leg at a time.
Yeah, we even talk about gear a little bit, which is just fun to see what, like, a cinematographer that's working on, you know, movies and commercials that are in the tens of millions of dollar range, that they use some of the same gear we use, like pencils and paper. But yeah, but before we talk to him, I'm going to give a couple shout outs. The secret word was audio cocktail a couple episodes ago when I remembered to do it. And Troy Smith emailed us. He wanted to know if he can buy a hat from us as opposed to going through Patreon. And I did the thought experiment of us setting up a store to sell Just Shoot It hats and came to the realization that we lose money on those hats anyway. So there's no real value.
We definitely lose money. And so... if you want a Patreon, if you want a Just Shoot It hat, get on that Patreon $10 tier pretty darn soon, because I'm going to raise the price.
What? No, now all of a sudden you're saying there's inflation going on? Come on. What are you talking about?
I'm laying the gauntlet. You have until the end of the year to get yourself a Just Shoot It hat at $10. Otherwise, it'll be $15. Either way, it's going to the same cause. Our dear friend Sarah, who has been tirelessly editing the show for years now. And if we lose her, it would truly be catastrophic.
It'll be on you. The same people that are mishearing me say Newark as New York. I also want to shout out to Cameron Nails, who said, Cam said that they like our one-on-one episodes potentially more than our guest episodes. So, hey, who knows?
Hey, thanks.
My theory is still that if you're a new listener, and Cam is a new listener, but if you're a new listener and you're just kind of hunting through episodes, the guests maybe, DP from Game of Thrones, director of a South by Southwest movie, you know, might be more interesting than like Matt talks about how he installed cable in his house. Anyhow.
I did that off mic.
One last thought.
One of us has the sense to do
that. Oh, come on. I think it's very exciting. And people, to this day, still send me messages saying how much they enjoyed my fiber installation story.
Well, if you want to hear more stories about Orin installing cable.
Are you segueing to Patreon? Because I have something before that. Real quick.
I mostly just wanted to dunk on your CPR videos.
Well, I appreciate that. Speaking of new listeners, they'll have no idea what you're talking about when you keep referencing my CPR videos or my triply sliced bagels. Anyhow, I just did a shoot and we had like an hour drive from the first location to the second location. And the agency, there's like 7 people there. And they're like, hey, Orin, what's your podcast again? We're going to listen to it on the way.
No.
On the God. Way to this next location. And I was like, it's called The Daily.
You know what you should have done? It's been like, you know, that's cool. Do any of you all have a SoundCloud though?
Yeah. No one did. But so they listened to Just Shoot It. And they're like, which episode should we listen to?
Terrible.
And I was like, don't listen to the one called Pros, Cons, and Myths of Commercial Directing, because I might have talked about you guys. And they're like, then what should we listen to?
Did you say that to them?
I said, it's probably not a good idea if you listen to anything about commercials recently, because I complain a lot on my podcast. And I think I said it in those words. And then they were like, well, what should we listen to? I was like, oh, well, we had this guy, Craig Zobel, on, you know, he directed The Mayor of Easttown. And they're like, oh, we love Mayor of Easttown. We'll listen to that. And I was like, cool. So we get to the location and the client, everyone, accounts person, the reps, creative directors, they're all like, yeah, so we listen to your podcast on the way here. I was like, oh, cool. What do you hear? And they're like, well, we listened to that guy that did Mayor of Easttown a little bit, but then we listened to this one you had about commercials. And yeah, we weren't quite sure if you're talking about this job or another job, but you have a lot of opinions. I was like, yeah, but I think they mostly heard the pros part. So who knows, Matt? Why are you shaking your head, opening your eyes big? I don't know. Anyway, point is,
well,
if you have a podcast, don't talk about people you're working with on it because they might listen to it.
Ain't it the truth? Ain't it the truth?
I did have one big discovery on my shoot, which was the art director said that I have a very distinctive selfie face. You know, the face you make when you take a selfie?
You want to see mine?
No, it's not. That is not your selfie face.
Yeah,
no, you don't. You don't do that. You don't smile like that.
Yeah, I do. I know. I just do it for pictures.
No, I've seen selfies of you. You don't do that. Do you?
Go on to my Instagram. It's all like that. Michelle Love Santoro, producer and director and actor extraordinaire, pointed that out to me. I do like a kind of like a big, dumb, toothy grin.
Matt, like, is doing, it's like an open mouth smile, which I don't even know if those are allowed. Okay, sorry, Kramer. We are going to get to you as soon as Matt tells you about our Patreon.
Patreon.com/justshootitpod is the place where you can show your appreciation for our podcast, the one you're listening to. It's kind of like buying Orin or I a cup of coffee to pick our brains, but we've been letting you pick our brains once a week for about 6 years. So, yeah, if you want to throw us $1, $4, $10 gets you a Just Shoot It Pod hat till the end of the year. Then it'll be 15, so get them while they're hot. Buy yourself that end of the year holiday Christmas present / tax write-off you've been dreaming of. Patreon.com/justshootitpod.
We are not accountants.
We are not accountants. Orin is the one who said that he writes off a Patreon subscription.
I said that?
Yeah, dude. You called it marketing or education or something dumb like that. Anyway, we're not accountants. Don't commit tax fraud.
I don't subscribe to other people's Patreons. So I don't know how I would do it. I write off any expenses we might have.
Sure, that's different.
Connected to Patreon.
Yeah, yeah.
Like buying, you know, boxes to mail out. Anyhow, TMI. Let's talk to Kramer and let's find out how the sausage is made and the Starbucks cups are inserted into Game of Thrones.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Kramer, how's it going? Welcome to Just Shoot It, the three busiest people in Hollywood. Took us seven times to try to get this interview to work.
Great to be with you guys. The only guy, time you can do it is midnight on...
Well, I'm sure you can relate, but with the kids and work, it's hard to find some quiet time at home.
Yeah.
I get it. Well, I'm grateful to be here with you guys. So thank you.
Well, obviously you've shot a ton of stuff. You shot Thor, you shot Creed 2, you shot tons of Game of Thrones. You just shot many Saints of New York and Respect. So I was going to just dive right into the present day, and I'm really curious, like, when you get such a huge project, like a Marvel movie, you know, or an episode of Game of Thrones, like, what's your first step in breaking down a script?
Yeah. Where do you even start?
Yeah.
It's a good question. Sometimes I ask that myself, you know, where do you start? And you kind of, you know, like you said, you start with the script and with the director and, you know, in the case of something like Game of Thrones, the showrunners, and trying to, you know, figure out what their intent is. And a first AD, you know, I worked with, you know, myself and the director, we were so completely overwhelmed by a particular sequence one day. We were just like, oh my God, how are we going to do this? How are we going to get through this day? And he just said, one shot at a time, you know, that's how you get through the day. So pretty much just break it down like it's anything else. And, try not to think about, you know, the big picture too much. I mean, they're different versions of the big picture, but trying to think about the money or the, you know, famous people involved or, you know, all the outside stuff that can kind of contaminate the filmmaking. You know, you just think about the pure filmmaking of it. And I remember, you know, the first time I was on a big movie set, you know, not shooting it myself, but visiting a set, I was just kind of blown away how much it was the same as, you know, what I had been working on at the time, which was student films and kind of small indie stuff. Actually, the set was Malcolm X. Spike Lee was directing it, and a friend of mine was working on the sound on it. And anyway.
Like a boom operator?
The sound mixer. Rolf brought me in, and I, you know, I saw Ernest Dickerson, the DP, you know, kind of like pushing a baby around, you know, baby meaning a pushing a baby,
an infant. Yeah.
A 1K Fresnel, you know, kind of like mushing it around on the floor, you know, himself, you know, the DP messing with, you know, and it's like, okay, that's,
Yeah, yeah.
That's what people do. Anyway, that's kind of, that was an epiphany for me, and it still, you know, rings true today. I don't know if I'm like dodging the question.
No, you're not. And I think that's like, I've been on some big sets. And by the way, remember the days where you can be like, hey, I'm on the set, you should come by and visit. Now it's like, you need 7 COVID tests. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I can't even have my kids come. I can't, nothing. People don't even, you know, think I'm making it all up. I'm like, I did this huge fucking thing. And, you know, you're not supposed to be sending pictures either, although.
Right.
Anyway. And we all.
You're like, I did see that water bottle you stuck into that one shot. There.
Yes. Yeah.
Good
that's
one.
A good Easter.
Good
one.
Yeah. The Starbucks cup. And, yeah. Next to the dragon. Yeah. So the dragon's eggs.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I don't think you're dodging it, but I guess I'm asking even, I'm curious, like the very first episode of Game of Thrones you got, what materials were you presented when you did? Well, did you have to like pitch on the job? Did you like, is it like a movie where you read the script and then you say, this is like why you should hire me? Or is it more like, hey, we know you from your work. Would you like to come shoot an episode of Game of Thrones?
It was kind of maybe neither of those or neither. And, you know, I had a relationship with the director, and he was Alan Taylor, mm-hmm. that went on to become, you know, it's been over a decade of, you know, working relationship. That's one of the, probably the best, most loyal relationships I've had in the business is with Alan. And, you know, I had done one other thing with him, and he was like, oh, I'm going to do this. Like, this was like Game of Thrones. First of all, this was a decade ago, almost a decade ago. So. Some of it's rusty, if you can believe it. It was season 2 of Game of Thrones. It was not an international phenomenon. It was not even a phenomenon, you know, that it is today.
But it was still like tens of millions of dollars an episode.
Sure,
right?
a big deal still, certainly.
Yes, it was a big deal.
And it's still like shooting 10 like 10 different countries or whatever, right? Like, isn't that... how that is?
Yeah, it was a big deal, but I didn't have to pitch for it because I already had the relationship with the director. And it was more like, he was like, will you come do this fantasy with me in Northern Ireland, in Belfast? And I was like, fantasy, I don't really, you know, it's not my mm-hmm. gig.
Yeah, yeah, we get it, Kramer. You're not on that nerd shit. I get it.
I am now, but
right now that it's mainstream,
yeah. And now that it's cool. Now it's cool to like it, you know.
Yeah,
I like it, but back then it wasn't cool, so I didn't want to be not cool.
And you had shot Boardwalk Empire already at that time, right? So HBO knew you.
Yes, HBO knew me. First thing I did was watch season 1, and it took me about 6 episodes. Kind of, I was like, oh my God, this thing is incredible.
You're like, oh, the blonde ones versus the snowy people. Got it.
Basically, yeah. Yeah.
They're called the brunettes. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I was an idiot. Okay. Well, it took me a minute. To like figure it out. I hadn't read the books.
Fair.
I wasn't about to read a, you know, 10,000 yeah, yeah. page book. I don't even know how to read. and I was given a pile of 10 scripts to read. And a pile of episodes to watch. And I was like, before you guys interrupted me, I was trying to say I got through to episode 6. I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. The writing is incredible. These characters transcend all mediums, all, you know, genres, I should say. And, you know, this is incredible writing. And that is what, you know, brought me in. And then I was figuring out how to, you know, how to make it something of my own so that you're not just being brought in to mm-hmm. Do more of the same.
And how to, yeah.
Yeah. How to, you know, which is for a cinematographer in television, it's more challenging in television to.
Well, you have to be part of a whole. Right. It's not like you can just throw the rule book out and be like, well, I think this would be cool. Right. Like, it has to fit in with the rest of the worldview. Right.
It does. You know, and I was one on that season. I was one of 5 cinematographers, you know, shooting, like you said, in multiple locations. So it's kind of daunting that way. You know, it's more like how do you fit into this machine? But I did want to actually throw out the rule book, to be honest, and do, you know, some of my own.
You're like, we're going to shoot King's Landing in blue. We're going to do, where's the snow
Westeros
area?
Yeah, there you go.
Wait, so do they, speaking of the rule book, do they give you like a lookbook? Do they say like, hey, here's kind of the rules, here's the vibe, like a visual aesthetic of some sort? Or is it you just pick it up from watching the episodes?
No rule book at that time, you know, maybe it changed later, but there was no rule book. It was more like, here are the scripts. This is what we did before. And David and Dan were like, you know, the showrunners were David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, you know, were like, the darker you make it, the happier we are, you know. And I felt like they were more daring than, you know, some movies I've worked on. So and you expect like the cliche of television would be like, oh, you know, it's supposed to be bright and flat and this and that. You know, this was before kind of peak or television.
Game of Thrones.
This was before Game of Thrones. Wait a second. Oh, my God.
I'm curious, actually, about just kind of a true nerdy, nitty gritty question. Right. So you've got all this material. You've said to yourself, I want to figure this out. Literally, where do you start? Do you pick up the phone? Do you get on the internet? Do you write an email? Do you pull out a notebook? What is that first thing?
Or print out the script? My other question to piggyback on that, because I think what would be super helpful as a DP is if you have a schedule from an AD, you know, do you get something like that in the beginning? Or do you literally just have the script, you print it out and you start like making notes on it?
Probably the latter. You know, the schedule, if I was given the schedule before the script or before coming up with some sort of plan, I think I would have been, you know, completely intimidated, because the schedule is on that show was like looking at a
beautiful mind.
Yeah. Unabomber manifesto or something, you know. It was all crossboarded and two units, the wolf unit and the dragon unit, you know, one unit stayed in Belfast, the other traveled around. We went back and forth between the two. I stuck with my director. I also traveled to Croatia with my director, but then stayed and became like the house direct DP for all the directors that came through, which was a blast because I got to meet all these cool directors. So yeah, printing out the script and making your notes on it, breaking it down. Sometimes I do my own sort of beat sheet to sort of figure out the beats.
Talk to us a little bit more about that. I'm curious. Like when you say beats, are you thinking
story beats?
Story beats. Yeah.
Yeah. Story beats. You know, first I need to digest it. And it also takes me a while to digest the script longer than I think most people. Some people are like, they read it once and they can, you know, recite it forward and backward. And, you know, they're like beautiful minds kind of people. And, you know, I'm not that person. I'm super visual and I need to kind of ingest the story, and it can take a while. So I need to read it, you know, between 1 and 10 times. I need to write out the beats, and then along the beats, I'll do, you know, visual beats where I'm writing in sort of what I would maybe visually like to achieve. And then maybe in another category, I'm writing maybe equipment I'd like to bring in, like, you know, catapult or, you know, just kidding. Anyway, you know,
and
camera.
So but at this point, you're kind of thinking camera moves and lighting and color and those things.
Mm-hmm.
And
kind of all at once, it sounds like.
Before the director and you have figured out the shot list.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so that when I have a conversation about a shot list, I'm at least coming from a place of knowledge and of story. You know, otherwise there's you can't be informed with a shot list without deep story, you know.
I'm curious about like the shot list and like when you work, I'm assuming different directors are different, but are there directors that are like, hey, how do you think we should shoot this? And you basically make the shot list, and then other directors that are like, hey, here's the exact shots and this is what we're going to do. And then some people that are in between, like what's your process for shot listing?
Completely. And this is more of a general answer than just Game of Thrones specific. It's all the way from a director has storyboarded every single frame of the movie to a director's like, yeah, what do you think? Or I write the shot list out. And the director is more of a writer.
Do you have a preference?
I don't. I don't. It's, to me, it's the chemistry and the material are more important than, you know, the work. And so I like flexing both sets of muscles, and, you know, and there's in between where the director actually is a camera specific director, but they don't like to write down shot lists. They like to find a shot on the day based on the blocking. And in television, like Game of Thrones, where there's, it's such a, you know, you guys are going to laugh at me again. I, you know, but it's such a fast schedule. You know, right.
You only have 82 days to shoot an episode.
No, it's not. You get 16, you get 16 days per episode. And, you know, you're like, oh, you know, some people only get 5 days for an episode, but it's like you get 16 days per episode. Maybe it's 18 days per episode. Maybe it's 22. But first of all, the episodes are 1 hour. They're not 52 minutes. And it's like, you know, fucking, you know, the cavalry like marches up the hill and, you know, you know, and Atlanta burned, you know, stuff like that. So it's, yes, it's a luxurious, maybe compared to some schedules, but it's faster compared to others. But coming from independent film, I was like, okay, I have more time than I do sometimes on a movie.
Yeah. But you have these humongous set pieces too, right?
Yeah.
Blood and gags and armies of people and
orgies and
right.
Yeah. Sure. You know, whatever. Beheadings, and I didn't do a beheading, but you know what I mean. Yes.
Yeah.
And they got much bigger after I left. But to answer your question, yeah, some directors will just scribble a shot list down on the back of a piece of paper, on the back of the script on the way to work. And that's your shot list. But which side do I like? You know, I like when the director has a really specific, you know, vision and set of shots that they want to do. And I can kind of then focus on other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine if I was like a DP and I like was kind of stressed out about like a big action movie, like a Thor or something, you know, or even like a Creed too, where there's like a lot of, you know, action sequences, and the director's like, yeah, why don't you just come up with a shot list for this boxing match? I'd be like, that is a lot of work, and you're putting a lot of pressure on me as a DP, you know, to like, it's one thing if it's like a drama scene, you know, it's two people arguing in a room or something. It's another thing if it's, you know, a huge like action set piece.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, that is, definitely, you can get sort of thrown a hot potato, and it's like, okay, yeah, two people talking in a room, you know, is definitely one thing. You know, something like Creed 2, there was a tremendous amount. That was not the case on Creed 2. You know, the director had tremendous vision and, you know, deep insight into what he wanted out of the boxing sequences, Stephen Caple Jr. And also the stunt coordinator shot a lot of stunt viz, a lot of the great stunt coordinators, stunt fight choreographers will shoot their own stunt viz, and or you shoot it with them, and they like they shoot and edit, you know, and they're filmmakers, and
so they're like pre-vising, they're doing shot by shot how the fight, how they imagine the boxing match goes.
Yep. And it's crazy, and it's, you know, cut to music, and it's, you know, usually like a really like crazy version of it, but then you kind of dial it. No, we're not crazy, but yeah.
I was going to say that sometimes, just the point about stunt viz, it's like there's an artistic angle to it, and there's also the practicalities of like, okay, well, this is where we are suggesting you put the camera to sell a punch, for instance, or for to feel the contact the most. And so it's kind of a literal dance between what they think is cool and what works for the choreo, which I always appreciate.
Yeah, and I imagine when they do the stunt viz, they're probably not cutting to an audience member or cutting to like super wide shot or overhead shot. It's probably more they're just shooting the match itself.
Sometimes. I mean, sometimes they get pretty artistic with it, you know. I mean, I remember if they cut into an audience member, but...
Do you ever get mad at them? You're like, of course you can do that shot with an iPhone, but how am I going to stick my 35 millimeter film camera spinning up between this guy's legs?
Yeah, but they were like using gimbals and, you know, A7s. And it was like, okay, I'm like, fuck, this is pretty good.
They're like, what do I need to do?
I hope I can do it as well. Yeah, but yeah, totally. What you can do with a gimbal, you know, a 2-pound gimbal versus a 70-pound Steadicam with a 5-pound anamorphic camera lens on it. And we shot Creed on Alexa Minis. And
Kramer, this is the show. Like, I want to hear that. Yeah, say Alexa Minis. Yeah, go for it, buddy.
Yeah. It was, yeah.
Don't pull a punch, pun intended.
Maybe 40 pounds, 40 pounds. You're right. So 70 is too high. But it was, 40 pounds out off of your body is a very different thing than a gimbal. And it's a very different feeling. And I'll talk about that in my tech, the thing at the end, the teaser.
Unpaid endorsement. Ooh, cool.
All right.
Yeah. I just had a shoot last week and I was shooting all this stuff with my iPhone and I posted some stuff on, I have the iPhone 13 Pro, as everyone that listens to this podcast knows, has the cinematic mode. And I posted something on Instagram that was like, my iPhone shots are making DPs angry since 2021 or something. And then quite a few DPs sent me notes on my shot. Yeah. They're like, the flare looks wrong.
Well, with the iPhone 13, you don't need a DP. It's amazing. It's like it's like the Manchester, England, they got that certain type of loom.
We've industrialized is what you're saying. Yeah.
There was a birth of a group of people called the Luddites.
Right.
And,
right.
It's the same thing. iPhone 13, you don't need a DP.
I mean, you don't even need a focus puller. You can choose the focus point after you shoot. Well, I was wondering, I love the Game of Thrones stock because I love that show, but I guess I'm curious about a feature, something like Respect. I mean, obviously you shot many Saints of New York, kind of recently too, but that was based on kind of this existing show, even though it was a prequel. Respect is like kind of totally... I mean, it's based on a true story, but you and the director had to kind of come up with a look from scratch, right?
Yeah.
How do you approach that? Like, what's the first step of figuring that out? References?
It's references. Yeah. It's lookbooks. It's other films.
Yeah. What do you like to reference most? Is it historical? Is it other films? Where do you start with that stuff?
Yeah. Or with Respect specifically, how did you guys start with that?
It's a combo. You know, I'd like to say I don't like to reference other films, but I do. And then I like as much primary source material as possible. In the case of Respect, it was a black and white documentary that was shot by, ABC News that you can like get it on YouTube. And it was like interviews with Aretha Franklin and her husband, Ted White. And we reshot those documentaries, actually made it into the script. And we reshot some of that, on black and white, double X film with a...
You use the authentic stock and everything?
Well, if I use the authentic stock, it would have been reversal and all that. But, something, trying to be authentic, but it was, we used negative black and white film because it was a black and white piece. And then another primary source was at, Amazing Grace, which was a documentary shot by Sidney Pollack in a church in Watts. And that was recorded at the same time and made into the best-selling gospel album ever in 1971. That film is just blows. If you haven't seen it, it's a mind. I had seen it before I even got the job. And I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. And then I saw that they were making a biopic about it. And that's a film where I really did campaign hard to get the film because I was really passionate about the material and kind of came from every single angle to try to get the job.
What does that mean? Every single angle? What angles were you coming at it from?
I might have to kill you if I have to tell you.
Your secret?
But just, people that I knew.
You bring him a special muffin that's so delicious and you don't tell him where it's from.
Yeah. Just kind of figure out, well, who do I know that might know somebody that's involved in the film? Or
is that a movie where the director more or less hires you? Or
the director. It's all pure director.
The studio isn't that involved in the...
Hey, it is. They are. And I had a relationship with the studio So that was part of it. And so I was, you know, studio, they like me at MGM, or they did at the time. I like to think they still like me. And, you know, I had done Creed. So I had a good relationship with that group of people. And I heard about the material and I was thrilled. But anyway, going back to source material for Respect, you know, that film was incredible. That was shot in 16 millimeter color. And we also shot some 16 millimeter color, and we recreated that concert at the end of the movie. And it's just very, you know, it's amazing. Not our work, but the film, right. The documentary.
Side question for like today, nowadays, you're shooting Respect, the MGM, a big studio, and about a very famous singer, Aretha Franklin, and you're recreating a famous concert. Nowadays, you know, and I don't know, this would apply to all your work, like, When you have a crowd for a big concert like that, is it usually visual effects, or like, do people still shoot, like bring in like 1,000 extras for a scene?
They do. We did. Although in that case, it was, you know, I don't know how many extras were there that day, but we did have up to 1,000 extras in some concert scenes, which surprisingly is when you're trying to do Madison Square Garden in 1968, 1,000 people is nothing.
Not a ton. Yeah. You're like, oh, great. This one's going to be a plate shot too, I guess.
Yeah. It's still, we tiled, and I'm sure they also filled in with digi doubles and, or digi whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And when you say tiled, do you mean like you shoot the whole crowd in one position, you move them to a different position? And do you have to lock off the camera when you're doing that?
Yeah. Which is very frustrating. And you don't have to lock off the camera, but if you don't lock off the camera, and I know you guys have background in visual effects or are visual to work, you aren't work in visual effects. And anyway, it gets more expensive. It depends on the visual effects supervisor, you know, the budget that they're working with.
Yeah. For concerts, it's always really hard because I feel like there's this like very common shot, which is the camera is behind the singer. Looking out at the crowd, and there's always spotlights, right? Pointing right at the camera. So you get a lot of flares.
Like half of A Star Is Born is that shot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never seen that shot. I don't know what you're talking about. I've never done that shot. But it's like you don't see anything.
But once you have flares and they're going in and out because the person is blocking the light, not blocking the light, and now on top of that, you're trying to tile extras, it's like the brightness of the shot is changing every single frame. So it makes something like tiling very difficult unless everyone is just sitting still and the flare is not moving. But once the camera's starting to move, that's where I imagine the tiling shot works really well when you're cutting to like clean audience reaction, you know?
Yeah. Well, one thing that, you know, I really wanted to do was move the camera with the music, or musically, I should say. And it was very frustrating to not be able to move the camera when there's any kind of crowd involved. Mm-hmm. You know, and the shots where we did the tiling were like frontal shots of the stage, you know, to show where we are. There's mm-hmm. a gazillion people. Some of them were but from behind, you know, with the flare thing. And I don't know how. And, you know, sometimes the entire environment is also not just the crowd, but the environment. We shot all the concert, a lot of it in the same place. So, you know, you've got Detroit, Cobo Hall, you've got Madison Square Garden, you've got, you know, we're like, and they just were changing architecture as well as crowds.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, it's cheaper to shoot it all at the same place than to, and just do it in post, huh?
Certainly, yes. Or in that case, you know, and the other approach is the zero architecture approach, which was Creed, which is, we shot on a soundstage with the boxing ring and the, you know, wrapped in 360 green screen. And we did have 1,000 extras in the foreground or 700 or something. And then we shot at real boxing matches with 360 array cameras or cameras in a 360 array and put the backgrounds in that way, you know, and I think that worked pretty well. Again, you know, there's camera movement, there's limitations with it, but camera movement is, you know, one of my big frustrations with the tiling thing. But anyway, you know, I really wanted to do like a shot where you're like going all the way through the crowd and like right into a close up, you know, and I couldn't do that. But recently I did get a spider cam, on the fit project I just finished. And, the beautiful thing about the spider cam, which is a camera on cables,
it does whatever a spider can.
It does exactly. And it's, but it's repeatable.
It's like a motion control, like cable cam, motion control cable cam.
Yes.
And can it turn? Or I guess you have a remote head or something you can pan.
That's not repeatable. Although you could theoretically get a repeatable head, but it's, that's not as, you know, the visual effects supervisors don't mind nodal movement. It's really the in and out stuff. Yeah, parallax. And then also, of course, a zoom is like absolutely verboten.
Well, no, you know, it's funny, actually, because I think that, you know, one of the, you know, you said at the beginning of our conversation about how like, oh, you know, it's enlightening to realize like, oh, the differences between a huge movie set and the indies that you'd been working on earlier in your career was that, you know, the fundamentals are the same, right? But one of the big differences between those early works and a Thor or a Game of Thrones is, or a Creed, is the visual effects. And so I'm curious, are there any other ways that, knowing that a big budget movie is going to rely on visual effects in a major way, are there other things that you do to collaborate with, you know, a supervisor, or does it alter your approach in any other way? Like, it sounds like you were fighting for a spider cam, for instance, so that you could do certain moves. Are there any other kind of like?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's a whole different, completely different. And it has no relationship to an indie film. It's a very different style of filmmaking. Agreed. And I think that in some ways it can be closer to animation than it is to, you know, more traditional live action filmmaking. And it's all changing a lot. But, you know, first of all, there's previs, real previs, you know, where it's done in Maya. You know, shots are worked out, you know, highly complex shots are worked out. And that's a huge, you know, you could say it's a loss of control, but then you could also say it's a huge, you know, asset to be able to figure out how to do this impossible shot, which if you, there's just no way on the day you'd be able to figure out how to, you know, do something like that with all those different elements, with elements that aren't even there. You know, you're capturing elements for the shot. You're not shooting the shot sometimes. Yeah. And it's all about the relationship with the visual effects supervisor. And, you know, some are very much all about getting it, you know, in camera as much as possible. And some are just getting raw elements and it's for manipulation later, somewhere in between, but it's a whole different role that you're dealing with that never existed in, you know, indie films or films without visual effects. You know, it's thrilling and it's, you know, you're doing like world building, you know, huge canvas stuff, you know, and it's exciting as hell. So it's not like, oh my God, you know,
yeah,
I'm doing visual effects movies. I'm like, yeah, I'm doing visual effects movies. It's cool. And it's like, it's a huge amount of photography, you know, involved. It's just sometimes it's a different kind of photography than what you thought you'd be doing. And it's better sometimes to do it later.
Right. On that note, like, are you involved in the decision of whether you're going to shoot something on location or just like on a green screen?
Not always. You know, sometimes they're like, you're doing this green screen. This is it. And I'm like, well, what about, you know, video walls or, you know. And they're like, oh, video walls, you know, they're so expensive. And, you know, I'm talking about like, I'm not talking about the volume. I'm talking about just video walls, which are, you know, the volume too, but just video walls. You know, it's, I like the way video walls look because they look somewhere in between green screen and actually I'm talking about like maybe like car stuff, you know,
right?
Somewhere in between. And you have to have a certain amount of car work to really justify getting this video wall in. And I'm like, well, what about, you know, And they're like, no, it's too expensive. I'm like, well, I'll save you.
We'll shoot it on my iPhone.
Shoot it on the iPhone Pro 13. You know, you don't need a DP and you don't need a visual effects. You can just get an app and it takes care of it. No, but yeah. Seriously, you need a composite. Sure. So you're going to save all this money, you know, $13,000 per shot or $6,000 per shot or whatever it is.
And you get all the reflections and all that stuff.
You get all the reflections. You get the actors get to interact with it. So, and then I'm like, I'll get you a bid from, you know, PRS or this company, and, you know, they can bring it in and they'll, you know, you kind of, and I'll shoot the plates and, you know, whatever. And they're like, oh, well, we'll get drivingplates.com. I'm like, okay, great. And, whatever, you know, it's kind of, it's more fun for me to do video walls and to do green screen in the case of like driving stuff, I should say, which is, I've only done it for that. And I've done like spaceships and things like that.
Well, I had just two more questions unrelated to each other, but one last one about respect, which is there's a lot of performance scenes, right? A lot of performance sequences, stage shows. Obviously you mentioned Madison Square Gardens. Did you guys like come up with any sort of rules of like how you shoot performances? And did you try to find your own flavor of like how you shoot someone on a stage singing?
Yeah, for sure. And we kind of tried to build, you know, not only rule books, but sort of, and, you know, again, I'm imagining it's like, you know, little book with rules. It's not, you know, there's no rule book. But anyway, you know, it's like a design to how we shot the music, and we tried to actually design things differently depending on the song. There are a lot of songs in the movie, and based on, you know, the story and the story within the song, and not just the words, but sort of the relate what's going on with her at the moment and why she wrote the song, and she's having, you know, it's so much harder to shoot a scene that doesn't have just straight dialogue, and it's more fun in some ways, you know.
Right, you have to keep it engaging when there's a chorus that keeps repeating.
It's pure visual storytelling, you know, just like when you're shooting boxing, you know, not just like, but in another way is shooting boxing, or just shooting a scene with no words in it is much harder, much more challenging, because it's just pure visual storytelling. You know, you're shooting somebody performing, and you know, some of the stuff that we went for was just that the music kind of drives the movement, you know, which is what I was saying before. And or one sequence was, you know, completely handheld and chaotic because it was taking place in you know, Amsterdam, which was this crazy concert where people throw flowers at her, which is what they do, or is what they did in Amsterdam in the 60s, you know. And there were handheld cameras on stage, and you can see the guy. We were recreating things.
I love the idea of casting a vintage camera operator just for the shot, you know. That would be so charming, you know. So,
Kind of did that, you know. Like, yeah. We threw period clothes on the camera operator and
the real camera operator.
And put an SR.
Did he have to join SAG?
No. No. Oh, good. Yeah.
He will now. I'm just kidding. I'm sure they don't listen. Well, so my last question, and obviously, Matt, if you have anything to add to, is a little bit of a pivot, but you've obviously done commercials too. I remember talking with you outside of our kids preschool a few months ago about that Will Ferrell Super Bowl commercial you did. But I'm curious, you did this Call of Duty spot with James Mangold. How was that? What was that experience like? It's like a pretty insane commercial that also takes place in like so many different locations. How do you, like, I guess, what's the difference between commercials and features as far as your role is, and using that as an example? Like, it's another big, you know, kind of like Game of Thrones sized commercial. How do you do that?
Yes, sure. I mean, that commercial, you know, you're like, what's the difference between that and there wasn't a very big difference between that and a big feature film. So not all commercials are like that. And that was, you know, an exception. It was, you know, if Jim Mangold is involved, then it's going to be, you know, it's going to be epic. And that's why they bring him in for something like that. And how that was done was, you know, it's a completely different language. than feature filmmaking or than television. It's, you know, structurally different in terms of ad agencies and creatives and the director's relationship with that. It's actually that, in that sense, is closer to television because, you know, in a way that the director has to answer to the showrunner and, you know, the showrunner is the ad agency. So it's, you know, it's different, or, and the client.
Right.
So there's three different parties, and in feature filmmaking, you have the studio. So it's kind of, there's, you know, there's, there is like a, you know, it's just very, and you're selling product, obviously. Most importantly, though, creatively, you're designing shots that are, you know, at most everlasting 5 seconds long. And you're putting so much energy into that, into so many fewer frames, you're going to get amazing, you know, amazing shit. So is that's cool. From a, you know, creative high standpoint, you're, it's harder to get that high. You know, you gotta smoke more shit because, you know, you're selling product. You're not necessarily telling a story. Although sometimes you are. The great commercials, some of them are just, you know, works of art and are in the MoMA.
Yeah. Speaking of great commercials, Matt, do you know that Kramer shot that commercial for the Jerry Seinfeld documentary Comedian, the In a World guy? Do you remember that commercial?
Yeah, that's great. I do remember. Yeah, yeah. That was, it was basically the trailer too, right? Or no?
Oh yeah, sorry. I guess it was a trailer.
Yeah, classic, man. It kind of put a nail in the coffin of narration and trailers, basically. Like, we don't do it anymore, and it's kind of like that I feel like I've heard is cited as like the official end of In a World, basically.
Well, I'm sorry for that.
I think all those guys kind of like retired at the same time too, so like I think there's, it's a happy ending for everyone, I think, especially it's a new beginning for children's choirs, I suppose,
for because part that's of the scores,
the trailer trend. Yeah, the new,
ever since Social Network. Yeah.
One more thing I will say about commercials is that you get sometimes they're tremendously more technical than, because they involve so much energy going into a, you know, you're like pushing a, you know, I don't know, a snorkel on a motion control rig through a, you know, piece of food or whatever it is. It's like you really like can learn and grow a lot. Technically on some of these things.
It's where you try out the new toys and you make the whole commercial about that tool.
Kramer, you're describing the yin and yang of this show, basically. Oren and I both do a lot of commercials, and it's kind of like that back and forth of like, well, it's fun to, you know, tell a story and do like some real scene work, and also isn't it neat to spend so much time on 5 frames of footage?
But also,
it's so special.
Isn't it frustrating that every camera move we do ends up getting cut because it's too long, like you were saying?
You like, oh, well, why don't we, you know, push through the thing and go around the thing? And the director's like, dude,
that's 7 frames for this.
I need like this. I need this moment. I need the eye to blink, like, you know, blink. Okay, that's it. That's all I need. I'm done. I got it. I'm like, but no, I got it.
Yeah, it's great. I'm working on this thing right now where this girl like selects an icon on a screen, and I had the animation, and the icon kind of spun when she selects it, and then now we're looking at the cut. We're like, that is like way too long. It just needs to go bink, you know, like it's like literally
you cut 3 notes there, Oren.
Yeah, you can't. It's every frame counts. Every frame's a commercial. I should start a YouTube channel called that. Well, what's next? What movie of yours should we watch next? So you got a lot of stuff coming out. Waiting for Godot, Spirited.
Spirited, I just finished, and that
bunch of no names in that movie. Ryan Reynolds, Will Ferrell, Octavia Spencer. Who are those people?
Yeah, that will be coming out in Christmas 22, and I'm really, really excited about it. I just finished. It was a whole different, something I'd never done, which was a musical. Always wanted to do, and a lot of big song and dance numbers in it. So I'm super, super stoked about that.
And I see it was written by Charles Dickens. Was he cool on set?
He was kind of a dick, you know, Ince. He never showed up.
Yeah, one of those.
It's loosely based on A Christmas Carol, and it's going to be really cool. I don't know even know how much I can say about it, but it's kind of like a mashup of comedy, of a musical, of a romance, of a buddy movie, and of a kind of emotional kind of morality story, which is what, you know, A Christmas Carol is. So.
Awesome. Well, Kramer, this has been so fun. Do you have a few more seconds to hang out and unpaid endorsement with us? Unpaid endorsements?
I do.
Unpaid endorsements.
My unpaid endorsement is Only Murders in the Building. Are you guys watching that show?
You know, I saw the first two episodes. You know, I love Steve Martin and Martin Short, and I have an appreciation of Selena Gomez also, but I just felt like the cocktail of like the three of them felt so kind of false to me. But then everyone is just saying that it's really great. So I guess I'm going to have to push through. It's kind of like Game of Thrones. I watched the first episode of that show like 10 times before I finally committed to it.
Then you figured it out. Yeah, I would say I've always really loved Steve Martin. I don't know that I love Martin Short until now. I feel like he's a very funny, but like as a more grounded actor, I never really bought his performances. But this one is kind of, it's managed to like let him do his thing. He's big, he's theatrical, he's over the top, but in a way that, again, maybe it's a little bit of age, a little bit of nuance, maybe it's just a better character for him. But like, I think he's kind of knocking it out of the park on that show. So the entire season is done. I've been so freaking busy. I'm like halfway through the season. But Only Murders in the Building has been a nice little solve for me on stressful weeks. So that's my unpaid endorsement.
I have a show, which maybe is obvious. And then Gear, I feel like the new DJI.
Oh, the Ronin.
4D.
The chicken camera, they call it.
Yeah.
Is that what they call it? Okay.
Because it stays, the head
we,
stays.
We haven't talked about it on
we
the
haven't
show,
talked
though.
About it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's because, you know, a chicken's sense. Head stays in place no matter where you move its body.
Yeah, yeah. There's memes of, like, dudes with, like, a shoulder rig with just a chicken on their shoulder next to that camera. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm curious, though, Kramer, why do you like the chicken camera? Why do you like this camera?
I think it will be a game changer in terms of, you know, all the different things that it can do. You know, I don't know why they haven't made this camera before, which is basically a gimbal that kind of, I don't know, sits on your shoulder. I don't know what's different about this camera other than that. I've shot with the X7 camera, which was their camera that was in the Inspire 2. Drone, and it's pretty blown away by it. It's a full frame tiny camera.
Did it have the built-in gimbal too?
It did, but it was on a drone.
Oh, okay.
And now it's the X9, and it's a built-in gimbal, and it's on a camera that you can kind of just pick up and hold versus picking up a giant Ronin you know, R2, which I actually used a lot recently on the last film, which is the big daddy, you know, gimbal. But this is just a tiny camera. I think that the LiDAR assisted focus is fascinating.
Have you used it yet?
No, I don't. I've never even seen it. I just read about it. So I just think it's going to be a game
bonker.
The focus is insane. And also, it's got the fourth axis, which is this arm that is kind of measuring your distance to the ground and kind of stabilizing on
vertical.
Yeah. So there's a whole another level of stabilization. And then the camera itself, I use the earlier generation of it, and it's impressive. And I think that it's going to, you know, revolutionize some movies. I don't think it's like, and it's taking things in a direction that is really interesting, which is where cameras get smaller and smaller and look better and better.
And that's operatable by one person. Yeah.
Operated by one person. Oh, you know, there's still somebody pulling focus, but it's the way they're assisted with the LiDAR. It's semi-automated, and, you know, it's fascinating. And it looks, you know, I would love to use it.
I would love, shoot us an email if you, as soon as you use it, because the thing that I tend to be more driven by features and ergonomics and speed, you know, like that, like I tend to, like, I want things to look as good as they possibly can, but like I get excited about the down and dirty tactics of a camera, right? Like, and I was very curious as soon as I started seeing those specs. I was like, I wonder what like a fancy cinematographer is going to think of this camera, because like you are limited to their lenses, right?
I thought you were too, and you're not. Oh. And their lenses, by the way, DJI owns Hasselblad, and they are Hasselblad. You know, their lenses aren't anything to shake a stick at. It's actually got an interchangeable lens mount. So no, you're not. But they have to be quite light. Weight lenses,
right
to fit on here, so you can use you know, Leica 08s, which are these, you know, based on the M lens, tiny lenses, which are gorgeous. You know, you can yes, it, tremendously limited by specs, and you know, but it records you know, ProRes RAW. And it's, I believe it's 10 bit. I mean, it's pretty, you know.
Yeah, it's full frame sensor. It's like 14, yeah, it's, 15 stops of range.
I'm very excited. And I'm excited that you are excited, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, what other people's reactions are to it. And it's, you know, I'm blown away by tiny, tiny cameras and how good they are looking. For another camera, and then I'll stop. But is the A7 S3.
Yeah.
Fucking beautiful camera.
I have one of those.
Oren's so excited that you said that, Kramer.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
But can I tell you, I was just on this shoot, right? We had an Alexa Mini or whatever. It was like our A-cam. But I had my A7S III because it's kind of this like lifestyle-y type shoot. So we have our kind of hero shots. But in the last iteration of this campaign, five of my iPhone shots made it to the broadcast spot. Because it's about this family that's like kind of having enjoying their time somewhere. So, you know, a lot of times I'm just taking the cast while we're setting up lighting or whatever, and I'm just like running around with my iPhone, and then I give all my footage to the editor just for fun, and then I was like, why are you using my iPhone shots? We have this like shot of this roller coaster, like on the, you know, we have the Ronin on this guy on a Segway with a Ronin and the, you know, Alexa and like nice lenses, and the editor used my iPhone shot, and she's like, I don't know, I just feel like the iPhone shot's just so much more dynamic, because I did like a, you know, a Dutch spin, like following with a roller coaster.
We were not talking about the iPhone.
But so the reason I brought it up is because I had my A7S III and I was like, it's just not as stable. I need to put it on like my little kind of DJI. I have the smaller gimbal, you know, the RS2.
RS2 is incredible. That's the other piece of gear. I'm blown away. And that works with the master wheels, and you know, it's like, it's RS2 is like, it's, and I was going to say earlier, you know, it's a different feeling than the bigger gimbals, or gimbals feel very different than Steadicam. And this kind of thing where it's going up and down, and it's not being, it's kind of a giveaway. I'm not giving it, describing it very well, but vertical, it's a different vibe, but it's the RS2 is amazing. All this interruptive technology excites me.
That's good to hear, because I feel like there are DPs that are like, oh, we got to do it the right way. You know, sure, they're going to say they want to be focused on this thing, and we're going to be like, sorry, we can't. The camera is doing its own thing. I saw, though, in the, I think in the Ronin DJI, the 4D, whatever that camera is called, I think it was like Rodney Charters and like Rachel Morrison. There was a bunch of ASC folk like in their intro video talking about the camera. So I think they're trying to get people like you on board. And it sounds like they're doing a pretty good job.
Luddites like me.
No, the focus thing is really the most amazing thing. And I cannot believe none of us have thought of that before. But using the LiDAR scanner to create an overhead view of the objects in your scene and to help you focus on them. You know, how awesome is that?
Oren, what you got, buddy?
Okay, I have two. My disclaimer is I don't have a ton of experience with either one of these, but they're both neat, so check them out if you want. The first one is a website called mynoise.net. It's just like a website with a bunch of different like calming noises. Irish coast, cafe, restaurant, waterfall, rain on a tent, Japanese garden. When you're trying to go to sleep, trying to meditate, trying to have some...
I told you I used to listen to a fake coffee shop.
Oh, noise. Yeah. Oh, I love fake coffee shop.
Yeah, it's over now. The website got shut down. But it was you could pick different flavors of coffee shop.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway. If you go to YouTube and type like coffee shop ambience, you'll get these amazing videos. I think I endorsed them before. But they have white noise, all that stuff. You know, just kind of stuff to help your mind stop thinking about other things. So mynoise.net, it's all of them and it's free. The other thing is I bought a new backpack. Did I talk about this yet? My knack bag. It's in the other room, but it's called the knack bag, K-N-A-C-K-B bag, knack bag. I got the medium. There's a series one and series two. I got the series one because I thought it looked better, but it's basically like a regular backpack. It's got all the pockets, all the everything you would ever want. You know, it's got like a great slot for your laptop, super comfortable cushioning and all those things. It's a 27 liter backpack, if that means anything to you. And you know, it can fit like your noise canceling headphones and your power adapters and your hard drives and all the things you want, a sweatshirt, a pair of shoes maybe. But if you want to pack more in it, you unzip this extra compartment and it expands to like a 35 liter backpack. And it's pretty much like you can fit enough clothes for like 2 or 3 days in there. You can fit another pair of shoes, pair of jeans, like 2 t-shirts, a sweatshirt. And it's amazing. I just took it on my trip and I do a lot of these trips for work where it's just like a couple days and like I'm bringing this big honking suitcase because I don't have a giant backpack and I also don't like giant backpacks, but this is a backpack that can work. Like you travel to your hotel, you unload it and then you zip it back up and you have like your day bag to go work with. It's really awesome. It fits under the seat in the airplane. And because I took my A7S III this last time on the trip, I used that compartment to pack all my camera gear. So it's like a camera bag. And I had a camera bag before this, but there was just no room for my sweatshirt and my food and my, you know, sanitizer, or whatever, all this junk that I carry with me everywhere. And this bag let me do it. So it's a knack bag medium. The series one is the one I got because it just seemed like it was a more casual looking bag. And it was a little bit bigger. So check it out if you're into backpacks.
Well, Kramer, this was so fun. Where can listeners keep track of you, learn more about what you're up to? Do you Instagram? Do you tweet? What's the best way to stay in the know on the world of Kramer?
Probably Instagram, K-R-A-M-O-R-G, I think. Kramorg?
Yeah, Kramorg. Because you also do coaching for the night before someone needs to take a test.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do that. Yeah.
Cram, have a know, cram
I throw that in for free, actually, yeah. Kramorg. Kramorg or something. Yeah.
And you even have a website, Kramer Morgenthau. Sorry.
I do have a website, KramerMorgenthau.com. Check it out.
Which is cool because I feel like, you know, you're an ASC member. You're like a DP that shoots gigantic things. And, you know, a lot of those DPs don't have websites. And it's great, especially kind of, you know, the ones that started a long time ago. But it's nice when you have a DP that's shooting big movies and big commercials that, you know, we get to see on your website what you like of what you did, you know? No offense to the things that didn't make your website.
Well, I gotta get on there and update it.
Well, you have that Will Ferrell Super Bowl commercial. That's kind of recent.
That spot is so good.
And you have Respect on here. I mean, you have, yeah. So
awesome. Well, you can visit justshootitpod.com to check out all the stuff that we talked about and previous episodes as well. And you can follow us across all social media at justshootitpod. If you want to ask us a question, you can email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com. We can hit Kramer up and be like, oh,
if you have a complaint
about Game of Thrones,
about some flares or a shot you don't like from Respect or Creed, let us know. We'll forward it to Kramer.
That's right. And you can follow me at Mr. Matt Enlow.
I'm on Twitter. I'm at Smitey Pyleg. Everywhere else, I'm at O'Kaplan on Instagram. I'm going to post a bunch of breakdowns of shoots coming up soon. So you should follow me if you want. This episode is edited by Sarah Weirda. And the music you're listening to is from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.